Welcome to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Most of the results are in from yesterday's election races in the state. Republican U.S. Representative Kristi Noem turned back a challenge from Democrat Matt Verlich to win a second term. Republicans Chris Nelson and Christy Feagin both won their races for the Public Utilities Commission. Democrats gained two seats in the state Senate but lost a few in the House. And voters turned down five of the seven statewide ballot issues, including the education reform measure, referred Law 16. Joining us now to talk about yesterday's election are Dakota Political Junkies Kevin Wooster, columnist with the Rapid City Journal, and John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. Kevin and John, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Thanks, Carl.
Well, John, any surprises? Or did things pretty much fall in line the way you expected?
I think they were, by and large, what we expected. I think perhaps Kristi Noem's margin was a little bigger than I thought it might have been. You know, these ballot issues in South Dakota tend to get turned down, and most of them did. I don't think that, you know, the legislature, by and large, comes back with a similar mix. And remember, this was a unique legislative race year, too, because of the redistricting. So you had new... or candidates who had a little bit new districts, or they may have been having two incumbents facing each other and so forth. But by and large, it seemed to come back about the shape it left.
Kevin?
Yeah, I think I was surprised by the margin of the Noem victory, particularly since there were some indications later in the campaign that it was closer than that. And I was kind of guessing all along about 10 points. She did a few points better than that. And kind of got up there to, I think, where she wanted to be in terms of a win if she's got any interest in a Senate race in a couple of years, or just contending with whoever may be running for the Republicans. And I also thought Matt McGovern might have a shot, or at least would keep it closer than it ended up being in the PUC race against Christy Feagin. So the margins there more than anything surprised me. And then I thought the Democrats might pick up a few more seats in the House, too. They really didn't gain very much overall.
Why do you think that was the case?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, part of the reason is they aren't able to fill all their positions, you know, when all the slots when it comes time to campaign. So they start out usually in a deficit against Republicans by often not having even a Democratic candidate in certain districts. Out here, often in the western South Dakota, especially outside the reservations, often the best race is the Republican primary for a lot of these legislative districts, because after that it's kind of, you know, sometimes not a race at all and sometimes a win for the Republican by a large margin. So I don't know where the Democratic Party goes from here, except that they need more money, they need more candidates, they need to be able to spend more money on more high-quality candidates, and they need a message. Apparently there's a message there that's not working with the voters, or they haven't figured out a way to get it to the voters. But it's a party in real trouble, I think.
John Hunter, do you agree with the Democrats' position in the state being in trouble?
Well, I agree with a lot of what Kevin said there about the message. You know, what would the party stand for? And besides being kind of anti-Republican, which is, you know, possible as a decent message, it doesn't. There's not much that inspires anyone else. But I don't think the party's particularly in trouble. I think if, as Kevin described, if you can get more candidates in more spots and high quality candidates, I don't think people are necessarily voting and saying, "I don't want anyone with a D behind their name." I just think they compare some of these candidates, and if there's an uncontested race, as there was in a number of them, both House and Senate, then they only have one choice to vote for. So I think the Democrats can still come back and have a future, but it would take more money and some more candidates and a better message.
Were either of you following the Democrats' postcard campaign? Some of the terms that I've heard, I think David Montgomery used the Argus Leader and fellow political junkie used the word aggressive. Did either of you follow those that campaign, those legislative races from the Democrat side?
Well, I followed it from afar, you know, and because I don't think they put a lot of effort in out here, obviously. And again, I think that's Ben Nelflap looking for a way to break out. out of the kind of this hold they're in, the Republican hold they're in, how you can use limited resources and try and reach a lot of people and target certain, you know, certain important races, didn't work real well overall, although he might have a better perspective and point to a couple of the seats that they picked up where he might think that helped. But again, that's a guy looking for a way to have an impact, and it's a challenge. He's got a big job.
John Hunter.
Yeah, I think it had decent success. It was a very affordable way to get a message out to a lot of households. And when I say it was affordable, that's if a local candidate wanted to kind of piggyback on this deal, they didn't have to generate as much money perhaps as it did, as it would for more expensive choices. But whether it worked or not, you know, it still, I think, goes back to some fundamentals about the candidates and a stronger message.
Of the seven ballot measures, all but two, the constitutional amendments went down, referred Law 14, which would have established a fund for large economic projects, and referred Law 16, the Education Reform Bill, were both defeated. Kevin, why do you think voters turned them down?
Well, in some cases, because they didn't understand them, and whenever you're in doubt, vote no. And in other cases, because I think there was some effective advertising and some effective message, use, for example, Initiate Measure 15, if you believe the Nielsen brothers polling on that, and I'm tending to pay more attention to them as the elections go on, there was kind of a shift in away from that initiative in the public, and as some arguments were made, particularly strong arguments on the idea of a regressive sales tax being made more regressive with impacts on the poor, and so that was a more complicated issue than perhaps some people saw it in the beginning, when it just seemed like, well, it's a great idea, we won't hurt as much, a penny added, add to education, add to Medicaid, and capture federal money on top of that money that we've been putting in from the state sales tax. But I think if you, especially when you get four or five or six, I sat at some polls yesterday and kind of watched people from a distance, from a safe distance, looking, and as you turn the thing over and you get onto the ballot issues, it seemed like there was either a lot of puzzlement and a lot of study, or just, oh boy, boom, 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 and I presume those were no votes, where people look at all those things and they're kind of complicated and you're not quite sure what they mean, a lot of them, and you just say no to them.
John Hunter, do you think a lot of that is just people voting no? Or just...
I want to know from Kevin how far a safe distance might be to some of those.
Well, I was using a telescope, and I was actually sitting on the couch kind of chatting with the poll women over in my polling area, and as people went through, I was just trying to keep an eye on people. I love being at polls anyway. I mean, that's a great place to be. First of all, I love all those poll managers, because they're great, and they love what they're doing, and then it's just so much fun to watch new voters come in and have people cheer. You know, the poll workers cheer when they find out there's a new voter, and people that come in, and it's so important to them that they walk in, they ride in, and it's a big deal. I like sitting there and watching.
Carl, I was hoping to chat about the referred law and the education reform thing for a second. You know, and I think one of the reasons your question was why did people vote no on some of these things, and in that case, you really had a kind of an omnibus education reform bill, five different points on that, and I think there are circumstances where people say, gee, I like two of these things, but I don't like three, or I don't like three and don't like two, and then I think you tend to vote no on those things. And when that was proposed late last year and taken up by the legislature and governor, I think as everyone considered the strategy of getting that passed, it was all legislative strategy. Which senators, which representatives, governor can get this passed? I don't think anyone thought that this would be kind of referred as a group and put in this position. And in hindsight, I think they may have, recognizing that now that it could be referred, might break that into smaller chunks and more palatable things.
Well, John,
you took
I'm just going to interrupt you for a second here, and we'll get back to this. But I want to talk to Representative Kristi Noem, who's on the line. So, Kevin and John, if you can just hold on for a little bit, we'll continue our discussion in a few minutes. Representative Noem, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
And congratulations on your victory yesterday. What was it, a late night?
You know, it was a late night just because the decision was made after the 10 o'clock hour. And, you know, you visit with folks and talk to a lot of them and thank all of your volunteers. And then we came back home to Castlewood last night. So it's either a really late night or an early morning, one of the two.
Why do you think South Dakota voters reelected you as the state's lone representative in the House?
You know, I just was extremely humbled that they gave me the chance to represent them for the next 2 years. We've got a lot of challenges going on in Washington, D.C., but I think that they've been able to see that I've been able to work on their behalf and get some accomplishments while still staying dedicated to the fact that, man, we've got to continue to address our debt and our deficit spending.
The election is over now, but Congress still has a lot of work to do before the end of this year. The most pressing issue, the coming fiscal cliff, the package of tax increases and spending cuts that will automatically take effect at the end of December. What are you and your colleagues doing to avoid that from happening, to avoid the fiscal cliff?
Well, you know, really, this fiscal cliff is across-the-board cuts and tax increases that could send our nation back into a recession. So the House has already voted and passed bills that would avert the fiscal cliff, but I'm going to continue to work with members of the Republican Party and Democratic Party to protect American families and make sure that we don't have these across-the-board cuts, that we make sure we have targeted spending cuts that really identify our priorities and then tighten our belts in other areas.
There's been a lot of talk about the need for bipartisanship from both Mitt Romney and President Obama. How much of that is possible now, particularly as you're dealing with the fiscal cliff issues?
Well, we've got to, in order to make any kind of progress, we've got to be able to sit down and get things done and accomplish together. And if that's one thing that I heard all across South Dakota, and I know we heard across the nation, was that the American people are very tired of the stagnation and the lack of action in Washington, D.C., and that they want to know that we're going to be willing to have those conversations that will really move our country forward.
Now, it's been a long time since we've seen a budget from Washington. Will we see one soon or even in the next 4 years under President Obama? It seems like just keep kicking the can down the road, more or less.
Well, you know, I hope so. The House has passed our budget every year. The last 2 years since I've been there, we've passed the budget. The Senate hasn't even proposed one for 3 years. And so we really do need the Senate to start taking action. I know they've got the same leadership team, basically, that they've been operating under the last several years. But they need to buckle down and really recognize that this is a requirement that's put in place by law and that the American people expect them to do their jobs. So finding in a budget that the House and Senate and the President could all agree on would bring our country a long ways towards making sure that we're doing our job and that we're identifying our priorities.
What is the status of the Farm Bill? Is this something that will be taken up in the lame duck session?
I'm determined that it will. It's my number one priority when we get back to D.C. next week, is to make sure that we get some action on a Farm Bill. You know, especially in light of the drought situation that we faced across the country and especially here in South Dakota, that certainty of a five-year ag policy bill would go a long ways towards making sure that, you know, we have some certainty that our farmers and ranchers and our economy, which relies so heavily on agriculture, is going to have the stability that it needs to really provide for our families here.
Looking ahead to your second term, are there certain things that are going to be your major priorities?
Well, I am focused on getting the Farm Bill done. Beyond that, tax reform is definitely needed. We need a competitive tax rate. We need to repeal the death tax, which is threatening so many of our family farms and small businesses in South Dakota. And we need a fairer tax code. We just can't continue to leave these kind of loopholes and exemptions in place, which special interests have gotten throughout the years and have been in place for decades. So that's my number one priority, as well as continuing to work towards a balanced budget and finding a way to pay off this debt. Our children and grandchildren right now are going to be saddled with debt that will really threaten the opportunities they'll have in the future. So those priorities need to be number one to make sure that we make America much more stable.
With these priorities in mind, how do you see last night's election results affecting the business climate in South Dakota?
Well, I believe that the people of South Dakota spoke quite loudly that they recognize that times are tough, but they don't believe that Washington, D.C. has a taxing problem, that it has a spending problem, and that we need to start working to make sure that our businesses can be more successful. We need to start limiting the regulations that are costing them money, and that we need to continue to work for those common sense type of solutions. So when I talk to people all across the state for the last 2 years, they believe that they make better decisions than people in Washington, D.C. do. And we need to give more local control to individuals so that they can have the liberties and freedoms that make this country so great.
Over the past couple of months, you're engaged in a campaign with your Democratic challenger, Matt Verlich. I'm wondering what you learn from being challenged in an election race. Are there certain things that you learn as a not just a candidate but as a congresswoman, and what you will do and what the concerns are of South Dakota's voters?
Well, Matt and I have two very different visions for the role of the federal government in people's lives. And so this last campaign was a very good opportunity for us to talk about those different visions and what role the federal government should have in decision-making that people have over their own lives and their own decisions versus the federal government making those for them. So, you know, this campaign always is a good opportunity to do that. To reaffirm and to visit with folks about what is important to them. And I really appreciate the fact that people have been candid, and they want a leader that will talk about the challenges that we have and offer solutions. They're tired of politics as usual, and they really do want someone who will step up and say, not only this is what I'm talking about, but this is what I've done, and this is what I voted for, and this really is going to be better for our future. South Dakotans are the kind of people that really recognize that working to get a better future isn't just talk. It takes a lot of action as well.
Well, Congresswoman Noem, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday. And again, congratulations on winning a second term.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime. I appreciate it. And again, I'm just so humbled that the people of South Dakota have given me an opportunity to represent them another 2 years. I'm going to continue to work for every single South Dakotan to do what we can to clean up Washington.
Thank you so much. That's Congresswoman Kristi Noem. And now we return to our Wednesday Dakota Political Junkies discussion. We were talking with Kevin Wooster of the Rapid City Journal and John Hunter of the Madison Daily Leader. And John, before switched to Congresswoman Noem, we were talking a little bit about the education reform measure 16, and the part of the problems with that was were the different elements, or so many different elements to that law.
Right, and I think there'll be something that will come back in this next session of the legislature that probably will break that apart into different elements. And I think I'm hopeful at least that the different sides of this issue can talk and come up with some compromise in parts of that, and have some of those goals met that the governor proposed last year.
We're kind of jumping around here. I was thinking about going back and talking a little bit about the Noem Verlich race. Matt Verlich faced an uphill battle from the start. Kevin, do you think there was any way his campaign could have produced a different outcome?
$5 million.
$5 million.
Maybe. I don't know. He was obviously underfunded compared to Noem, but he had a reasonable amount of money. Last I knew, they were talking about $1 million. And he did get his message out. He was certainly swallowed up in the final weeks. He had a lot more airtime than he did. And they were both pretty negative, in the way their approach went in the final weeks. But that tends to work. And, again, if you believe in the Nielsen polling, that it showed a gap that was narrower, 6 points maybe, and then in the final days expanded to 12-plus in that last Nielsen poll, and then, the margin ended up, 16, something like that, 58-42. And when you get up around 58, I think that's a pretty good win for an incumbent Republican in South Dakota. It's not a blowout, and Matt Verlich certainly wasn't blown out. He contested this in a very aggressive way and with, I thought, fairly smart issues, and established himself, I think, as a legitimate candidate in South Dakota. What that means for 2014, I don't know. But look, I couldn't imagine from the start that he was going to win this race. And maybe it would have been different if Stephanie Hirsa-Sandlin had decided to get in, or maybe not. But anybody that underestimates Kristi Noll, as I've done in the past, is going to probably be surprised, because she's a pretty tough campaigner, and she's got grit. She'll hang in there.
So what do you think this means for 2014? I know we just finished the 2012 election, but there's been talk that maybe Kristi Noll would be in a good position to run for Senate if she wants to. Mike Rounds, the former governor, has already pretty much said that he's going to run. He's got an exploratory committee. John Hunter, do you think Kristi Noll is in a good position to run for Senate if she wants to?
Well, I don't. I still think it's a little early for that, and I'm not an expert at that, but with Mike Rounds in there, I mean, that has the potential of being a big national race, again, back to the Dashiell Thune kind of stuff. Depending on what Tim Johnson decides, Mike Rounds is in. Certainly Stephanie Hirsa-Sandlin would have the potential of being in that. Brendan Johnson is considered a possible candidate in that. And with two terms, you know, you'd have less than two terms when you start campaigning of that for Kristi Noll. It just seems a little fast for her to try to make that jump, and with all those other candidates in there.
Kevin Wooster, a little early for a Senate race for her?
Maybe, although I'm always surprised at how ready people are to jump to the next level if they have some success at one level. And I know she'll get a lot of encouragement from her supporters. I'm trying to figure out exactly what the relationship is between the Noll and the Rounds factions, because I don't sense right now that there's a great deal of unity there. And Mike Rounds, when I've spoken to him, has sort of been not hesitant to fire shots across, warning shots across the Noll bow. In fact, he essentially said about her potential Senate candidacy that he likes her in the House, that he thinks she's a fine congresswoman. And that was that was meant as a message, which is, stay in the House because I'm running for the Senate in 2 years. And he would be formidable. But as I said, I don't underestimate her. The Republicans tend to make wise decisions in those areas a lot of times and try and avoid these kind of fights, although there certainly have been some in the past, you know. And again, as John said, what's Tim Johnson going to do? He doesn't talk like a candidate in 2014 right now. And to me, he doesn't act like one. If he were to challenge Rounds, that would be quite a race. And I don't know, I would think Rounds he would see as a little more formidable than the Noll for Tim Johnson. But I don't know. And then as John says, what's Brendan going to do? Where does Stephanie Hirsa-Sandlin decide to jump back in? What's her time frame? And would she be interested in the governor's race at some point, too? Because I always thought that would be a good race for her. So there's still a lot to shake out between now and 2014, but I certainly wouldn't rule out Noll as a potential Senate candidate.
In discussing the ballot measures, the two referred laws were supported by Governor Dennis Dugard. I'm wondering, John Hunter, if the Dugard administration is hurt at all by those defeats.
I've tried to think of that a fair amount in the last 12 hours, but I kind of concluded that they won't hurt. There is something, I think, maybe to the large recruitment, you know, the big construction project thing, that perhaps more, I think, than the education reform. And again, I think there's circumstances with that. I think he probably maybe recognizes, or his administration does, the power of the teachers kind of in total, you know, the ability to clarify their position and win that. So I don't think it really hurts, and I don't think you have to win them all to kind of keep your authority or your leadership. You don't want to lose them all either, but in general, I've kind of come down on the side that I don't think it'll hurt a lot.
Kevin?
Yeah, if you mean hurt with voters, I certainly don't think most voters are going to make the kind of connection and say, well, the governor's a loser on these things. the large project fund. I think it'll be interesting to see how he proceeds with trying to provide incentives for these kind of projects and whether there's another way to go and even a better way to go. And I think, as John touched on, it'll be interesting to see how the governor comes back next year and further defines his vision for education in South Dakota, because this was a pretty defining part of that vision, and we'll see if there's more to it and if he comes back and kind of takes smaller chunks.
Well, Kevin, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us on Dakota Midday.
Sure. It's great to be here.
And John, thanks for your time as well.
Thanks, Carl.